The IAB presents the Simplify and Inspire podcast.
How do we make it simple?
Try to stop a lot of the buzzwords.
A chance to change the way a whole industry works.
For more information, visit iabaustralia.com.au.
On today's Simplify and Inspire podcast, we're going to be interviewing Dave Yovano. Dave is the CEO of Impact, formerly known as Impact Radius. Dave's in Australia visiting the local Impact team, which is now headed up by local digital identity Adam Furness, who's the MD of the local team. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks very much, Gail. Happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. You've been at Impact for about a year or
so? Just over a year.
Yeah.
Interesting story. So I've known the founders of Impact for about 14 years. I was with a company called Conversant at the time, and we acquired their first business, Commission Junction. So, you know, I started in this industry about 20 years ago with Conversant, helped build up the media business over the course of 9 or so years. I was the chief operating officer for the media businesses. We were about $400 million in revenue, over 1,000 employees, acquired a lot of businesses, about 16 in total, and I was leading a lot of the M&A and the integration efforts of those businesses, both technology and people.
You're obviously very used to integrating different companies. Mm-hmm. Can I just ask you what works and what doesn't? I know that's a huge question, but obviously you've taken lots of different companies, pulled them together, pulled them apart. In your experience, what makes a successful integration?
That's a really good question. I'm glad you asked, because it really does, in my experience, come down to one thing primarily. Usually when I've been part of 20 integrations, you know, acquisitions probably over the last 20 years, I think the most successful acquisitions and integrations come from leaving the original team and business model intact for a period of time. Most often when you integrate right away, you know, the company that's being acquired looks at it as an exit, and you kind of lose something in that original asset. You lose the original passion. You lose all those things that really drove that original business and the success that they had. So I think our most successful acquisitions, M&A activity was, you know, get an incentive plan in place for especially the key employees, not just, you know, the CEO and the original founders, but all the key employees should have a good incentive plan in place over the course of 2 years. And then let it kind of more organically integrate with you know, the business that is acquiring. I'd say that's probably the number one thing.
Not often done.
No.
Thanks for that. And so you've joined Impact. Why Impact, and what led you there?
Oh, that's a good question. A couple things. One is you know, these are individuals that I've known for quite a long time. Per Pedersen in particular, our founder. Like I said, I've known him for about 14 years. But as well, the CTO, head of operations, and also Todd Crawford, who leads some strategic initiatives. So these are people I know. I know what they're capable of. They lead with strong product and engineering, and I think that's so critical. When you're in the marketing technology space today, you've got to have a really good product in the market. And so I was able to validate that. That's one of the things I'm most excited about, is just being able to demo our product and see the eyes light up with the people that we're talking with, both prospective customers and existing customers. So I think it's, you know, a known team, very strong product. And then lastly, I would just say between Per and myself, good alignment on vision. A couple different companies, I've been after a strategy where we're trying to bring all marketing data together in one place, one platform, so that our clients can make really intelligent and confident decisions on how they're investing their next marketing dollar, and felt that this was a company that really was well positioned and with the right resources, the right products, and the right leadership team to actually pull that off, because it's a very difficult thing to do.
Dave, we have a broad range of listeners to this podcast, right through from uni students to CEOs. To please all those audience types, give me just a couple of lines on what your actual product is.
Sure. So Impact is a marketing technology platform. There are three products on this platform. One that is designed to stop ad fraud. We call that product Forensic. There's another product designed to help brands create new types of partnerships on a performance basis. We call that product Radius. Our last product is all about helping to bring all your marketing data together in one place and essentially use it to make confident decisions on how to invest your next marketing dollar. We call that product Altitude.
Okay, and you're working with a mixture of clients and agencies?
Yes, very much. Yeah, especially in the Australian market, agencies are pretty prevalent. In the U.S., we tend to work more directly with brands, and so we'll adapt based on you know, the local environments.
Okay, And you've changed your name. Why?
The company's been around for 10 years. The first product that we started with was Radius. The team set out to essentially create a new business model, a new technology platform around creating performance partnerships between brands. And I think most people know that as the affiliate marketing space, but it has grown much bigger than just the cashback and loyalty sites that most affiliate marketers are aware of. It now includes tapping into influencers. These are people that have large audiences on social media platforms and other websites that, in terms of how they pull an audience. It includes more brand-to-brand sort of relationships that are just happening organically, where brands are cross-promoting each other. In this market, we've got Ticketmaster, for example, as a client, and they're partnered up with large platforms like Facebook, like YouTube, like American Express, and they are finding ways to, you know, use your Amex points to buy a ticket. Facebook has innovated some new ad units where if you follow an artist, you may see a link to go see that artist who's playing nearby. And if you click on that link and you buy a ticket, Ticketmaster will pay Facebook on a commission basis for those tickets. And so we're very proud of the fact that our platform has evolved to the point where we're kind of creating new opportunities for brands to really grow their business through more non-traditional sort of advertising.
And is that performance and affiliate space, I guess one of the big criticisms of that area has been really sort of that last click attribution and not understanding the whole funnel. Is that changing?
100%. So along the lines that I mentioned around how important influencers have become, they will tend to show up early in the consumer journey. So a consumer journey is, just think of it as all the different touch points of advertising between when a person first becomes aware of a product or service all the way through to when they actually purchase something. So you can imagine all the impressions, all the clicks that happen, whether it's online or offline. Our platform is really designed to track all of those things, and we're giving brands the tools to be able to now compensate an influencer. You may have heard about it through a blog post, let's say, and through our tools, this hasn't been available in the past. Brands can give them a portion of the commission. You can actually split your commissions now to all those who may influence a purchase instead of, you know, just paying for that last touch. You know, typically that's been Google and search, and I think for years and years people didn't really know how to do it otherwise.
Yeah.
And so we're proud of, you know, being able to provide more capabilities for brands. And it was really the success of that first product that we started early, we created a new product. As most businesses start up, it takes a number of years to cross the chasm, as they say. So in the U.S., it was probably 2013, 2014 when the first big retailers kind of saw the vision that we had created and moved their traditional affiliate programs over to this new platform. So this was Target, Cabela's, Dick's Sporting Goods, a lot of these big retailers in the U.S. A couple years later, we got into the big platform companies like Uber and Airbnb and Ticketmaster. Over the last year, we've been very successful in the financial services vertical, Capital One, American Express, HSBC, and then more recently, travel sort of clients. And it was really the success of that first product that gave us the confidence to really build our vision out much further across other marketing channels. And so that led to the acquisition of two businesses. So when I talk about our three products, Forensic and Altitude came from acquisitions. So Altitude came from our acquisition of Clear Sailing. So they were actually part of eBay Enterprise.
Okay.
And when eBay broke up from PayPal, they sold off a number of their technology assets. So we were able to acquire Clear Sailing. So Clear Sailing, for the longest time, was a leader in Forrester's Wave Report for attribution, multimedia mix, modeling, and things like that, just measurement in general. And then we acquired Forensic, and we've kept that brand name with the rebrand. Leader in fraud, but also a complete suite around verification, including brand safety and viewability.
Okay. I had a quick look at your website. One of the words, sort of the phrases that jumped out at me was that you're a values-based organization. Mm-hmm. I'd love to know what that means to you.
Sure. Well, a couple things. I've been on board for just over a year. 2 weeks after I joined, I took 30 members of our management team offsite, and we got to know each other. And I've done this a couple times at different companies. It was a great experience. I mean, people crying and just telling their life stories and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my process to kind of understand the DNA of the company. And so, you know, I think, you know, values, it's not something that you create and push on an organization. I think for a company that's been around for 10 years, you have instilled values. Like, there's a certain DNA of a company. And that was kind of my process to surface that, but also challenge the team on what we wanted as values, or another way to say it, like what are the behaviors and characteristics that we want out of our employees every day. And so we had breakout sessions, we debated it, we talked about the founders and other companies that you've worked at, what are, you know, the values or behaviors that you really looked up to that inspired you. And we walked away from that session with seven or so values or behaviors and characteristics that we wanted to talk about with the company, because we wanted to see more of it every day at the office. So I actually put on a culture presentation for the company just to have that conversation. Probably don't have enough time to go through all of them. Mm-hmm. I would probably highlight at least three. I would say first, we are very much a customer-driven organization. I like to say that we don't sell as a company. We get in front of customers or potential customers and we workshop. We're trying to solve problems that will really improve their business. When I mentioned the credit card vertical, for example, our founder, Per, was very good about getting in front of prospective clients like Capital One and just, you know, spend hours and hours analyzing workflows, what are your pain points, and we identified this issue around what we call compliance, very primitive processes that they had in place to really limit their liability if their marketing efforts were not promoting their offers in the right way. We developed a software solution to really solve that. As soon as the other credit card issue were solved, that they were very quickly to kind of move over to our platform because of that sort of innovation, essentially. So that's one. Second one is kind of related to that, I guess, would be innovation. Like we're led and driven by the belief that science and technology has the potential to transform business, and that inspires us to innovate and disrupt and build new capabilities. And so really the one and two there go together. Really kind of being customer driven and wanting to solve problems for customers, and then following that up with really innovative sort of solutions to help improve their business. And then maybe the other one I would highlight is just urgency. Like we just operate with a high degree of urgency. We talk about get stuff done. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they replace the word stuff with another S word, but we move fast, and you know, there's high degree of accountability, which is another value.
So that's a tricky balance at times.
People
that
are
urgency
into it.
They're into it.
They really believe in what they're doing, which is exciting.
Okay. So I guess, the business comes at an interesting time in terms of, and I guess it opens more doors for you, because particularly marketers at the moment are more than ever scared of risk. Mm-hmm. So either with the brand, the fraud area, but also the trust and transparency area as mm-hmm. well. So it's probably easier to mm-hmm. open doors to marketers. Are they
sure.
more open to having partners guide them through that and workshop? In past, often mm-hmm. clients would not have wanted to share that level of info with
right.
partners.
Yeah, you mentioned trust and transparency. Obviously that's one of the big topics that are out there. I remember at the last IAB event in the U.S., that was like the number one thing up on stage, this issue around trust and transparency. You see it with what we're dealing with right now with WPP, with their CEO stepping down. A lot of people don't know that actually one of the drivers that I think led to that is you got large brands like Procter & Gamble, who's been a WPP client, they've pulled their spend saying, we don't trust that the ads that we're buying are real, that they're showing up on the right side. So I think the whole fraud concern has been a big driver of this idea of, trust and confidence. And it's interesting, I started in this industry 20 years ago, and fraud existed back then. It was just in a different form. Like we dealt a lot with cost per click sort of advertising. We had sites in our network early on that were generating a lot of clicks from Korea, for example. People didn't even have the tools and technology to understand the geo source of traffic, and so they were just buying clicks, and they weren't really tracking everything through to a sale. And so I think what has changed over the last 20 years, though, is that things have gotten very advanced on the kind of fraudster side. Mm-hmm. And I've been in the space for a long time. I've learned a lot being part of Impact and Forensic in terms of what these fraudsters are doing. There's a lot of money that's spent in online advertising, especially with the high CPMs. And you've got publishers that will associate with other partners to kind of increase their supply. Most of them do that. So they don't have malicious intents. They just need technology that helps them verify that their partners are actually real. You'll have an amazing looking website, you check any publicly available report, and it looks like they get a lot of traffic, but it's all fake. It's a complete bot. And so you do need technology that can detect that and block that out.
So where do you think we're at as an industry on that journey? I know there'll always be new scams and new approaches, mm-hmm. but right now, where are we? Under control? Are we doing a better job?
I think, well, you look at somebody like Procter & Gamble that will pull $200 million of their media plan out to say, we're not going to advertise anymore until you can prove to us that you've cleaned your inventory up, right? Mm-hmm. Prove to us that ads are being shown to humans, that they're seeing them, that they're showing up on the right side. So we've kind of reached a little bit of a climax where the demand side is saying, I want this, I need this mm-hmm. in order to continue doing business with you. I do think, though, at the more tactical level, you've got different incentives in place. If you manage that fully, volume is likely to go down, right? So you've mm-hmm. got a very difficult channel of conflict there that needs to be reconciled. So it has to be driven from the top. And it's not just all about fraud either. So when we talk about like trust in your marketing, I saw some research recently that, less than a third of marketers actually trust their marketing data, that they can use their reporting or their data in a way where they can make confident decisions in how they're spending their money. A lot of things are very siloed. And so the same thing, you've got, the search guys and the display guys and the performance marketing guys all kind of operating in silos, and they're not really kind of understanding how one is impacting the mm-hmm. other to understand what's really truly driving incremental business results. And so same thing, I think you need a message from the top that is kind of dictating a more ideal state. We need a more holistic scorecard. We got to bring these things together in a more unified way so that we can improve the trust and the confidence in our marketing data.
So a lot of clients seem to be jumping on that and getting that hygiene level mm-hmm. in a better state. P&G and Unilever have both talked that they're feeling more comfortable, that they have that sort of hygiene stuff under control. Who are the clients then really shining in terms of taking it to that next level, making stuff effective? The cleanup's been done mm-hmm. to an extent. Mm-hmm. Who's then stretching what they're doing from your client point of view?
We have a couple clients. So one, so Uber is a large global client for mm-hmm. us. They've really evolved the types of partners that they're working with through our platform. They've got a number of strategic business development partnership deals in place. They've got channel partners in place, and they're using our platform to kind of grow in unique ways. But then they've also kind of added forensic to the mix to kind of understand and manage and block fraud, for example, from not just their performance marketing programs, but they're looking at the rest of their marketing channels. I look at clients like HP, for example, on just the trust in your marketing data. They're using our Altitude product to basically track all of their marketing spend across all channels, so their paid search and their social ads or display ads, and they're kind of bringing that all into the Altitude product and normalizing all their data across their channels at the event level, so all impressions, clicks, conversions are tracked that way, and they're using it to make pretty confident decisions in how they're investing their marketing spend. I think what's next
because they can see the whole picture
exactly,
in one place.
Exactly. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm particularly pleased to be interviewing you today because I saw you're an ex-IAB board member in the States.
I am.
So when were you involved with the IAB?
I think it was a 3-year period. When I left Conversant in 2008, I think is just because I changed companies, you forfeit your seat. So it had to have been 2005 to 2008 probably.
Yeah. And are you involved in any industry body activity in the States?
Sure, yeah. I dealt a lot with measurement. Mm-hmm. We were dealing with a lot of the same issues back then as we are now. And very early on, even before I was on the board, was leading a lot around just the standard IAB ad sizes. That's kind of how far back it goes. And that was like, when I look at one of the major milestones of the IAB globally, I think that really helped to demonstrate the importance of an industry body like the IAB to kind of get an industry around some standards so that we can scale some of the things that we were doing. But, it now involves fraud and developing those techniques. Mm. We've had a lot around, user consent and things like that. I've been involved in a number of different committees through my time with the IAB, but really like proud of the fact that we've got an industry body well run. Randall Rothberg, he's been with that organization for a very long time in the U.S., really, really good group of industry leaders, genuinely interested in kind of progressing the industry forward in a very positive way.
Yeah, good. So you talked a lot about the different acquisitions for impact. Mm-hmm. Going back to sort of dropping the Radius name from the master brand, what was behind that?
I think it's just a part of our evolution. We, like I said, we started with the original Radius product 10 years ago. We've had wild success with that. We've acquired two businesses, Forensic and Clear Sailing, which are now Forensic and Altitude. Over the last 2 years since we acquired those businesses, we've been busy building a new big data backend for all three products. And we've migrated all three products successfully to this new platform. And with that, we released a new version of our software, a new integrated user experience for all three products. So right up to the rebrand, you actually had to sign into three different applications for each of our three products. And with this new release, it's an integrated user experience. We've got integrated reporting, a messaging framework, single sign-on, and things like that, and then, you know, new beautiful reporting package. It was time. It was time, and I think it more, you know, accurately and cleanly positions the different products so that people understand that Impact is the name of the company, it's the name of the platform, and then we've got, you know, three products on this platform. It's Radius, Forensic, and Altitude.
Okay. It's a strong word. So your trip to Australia, is it first time here? Have you been?
This is actually my first trip to Australia. I have an 18-year-old daughter, and she's even been here. For whatever reason, I have not made it to Australia. I've been to New Zealand, but I've not been to Australia.
And I hear you're a surfer, and you've never been to Australia.
I know. Yeah, I live in Southern California. We have a Santa Barbara office. I'm about half hour south of that in Ventura. Mm-hmm. I've been there for 20 years, and yes, love surfing. Mostly on the weekends is what it's regulated to. There's a lot of work to do, but very much looking forward to more of a presence in this market and taking advantage of everything that Australia has to offer.
Yeah, great. And you've got a newish MD in Australia, Adam Finesse, who's well known in our industry and to the IAB. Mm-hmm. So where does the overall business see the Australian part of the business?
So I think a couple steps of our plans for APAC in general. I think we've come to this region mostly from our large global brands that have needed more local support. So Airbnb, Ticketmaster, Uber, those types of clients. There's a couple I can't mention. But that's what kind of started our presence here in Sydney initially. So that's just over a year ago that we kind of landed here, especially with Adam coming on board now, very interested in continuing to build out more commercial success here locally. But then also pretty quickly, I would say, into next year, certainly establishing a presence in Singapore. We also have servers and a license already established in China, for example. That's part of our growth plans, as well as other countries within the APAC region, Japan, South Korea, et cetera.
Fantastic. And I'm sure you'll be doing lots of road shows to clients while you're here in Australia.
Absolutely. Adam's definitely got me a full schedule.
I hope you get time for a little bit of surfing in the mix.
Yeah, I hope so.
Thanks for joining us, Dave.
Great, thank you.
The IAB's Simplify and Inspire podcast. For more information, visit iabaustralia.com.au.